My story is that I was married to a man for 40 years, but I was wife number three, and I was the one that survived the longest. During his first two marriages, he had multiple affairs, and no surprise to most of you, he had one in ours, and he had a surprise child, which we got through, we worked through, did lots of therapy, and managed to rebuild a really strong and powerful relationship. And then he was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. But his background was that he was a psychiatrist and a psychoanalyst, so he had been in lots of therapy for many years, but he was a really wounded and very... had lots of insecurities. And I thought that when we had gone through the rough period in our life of getting through this affair and supporting the surprise child, that we had done a lot of work, and I really wasn't expecting all of that old stuff to surface. But when he got Alzheimer's, it came back with a vengeance. And so one of the things that we dealt with in the beginning was, as he got more insecure, he started accusing me of having an affair with this person or somebody I didn't know, somebody else I didn't like. And I thought, I'm not sure how I'm going to cope with this because it isn't who I am, and he should know that. Well, that's kind of the first response I had. And then I kept struggling with it for a while and then woke up one morning and said, I know what we need. By that time, he was in a hospital bed because he had fallen out of bed several times, and he had prostate cancer and multiple other issues, so he was up every hour, and I needed to hear him get up so I could go with him to the bathroom. And so I had a single bed next to the hospital bed, and we could touch each other, but it was not the same as sharing a bed together. And that had gotten him more and more anxious that he was going to be abandoned again. And he was abandoned as a child. His mother, her story will come more later in the story, but he was abandoned as a baby, as a child, and really never found a way of making peace with that. But I woke up one Saturday morning and I said, we had two recliners and a table in between, and we would, at the end of our beds, and we'd watch TV up there or read, and that was what we had done for years, and it was fine, and we enjoyed it. And I said, I want to get rid of this, the two chairs and the table. I want to get a two-seater recliner so that we can sit next to each other and snuggle and have more physical contact. Well, let me tell you, there are not a lot of two-seater recliners. You can get an extra wide one person that's not big enough for two comfortably, or you just can't find it. We spent the entire day with my younger son going to probably 24 stores, but we eventually, on our way home after dinner, my son said, I need to stop at World Market, just pick up one thing for tomorrow. And lo and behold, what's holding the door open but this big, ugly-ass, brown, two-seater recliner. And it was ugly, and it was in our bedroom the next night. And it was perfect. I found that if I just put up one side of the recliner, it meant I had to scooch over next to him, lean on him, hold hands with him, put my feet on his side. And from that day on, there was never another accusation about my having an affair. It was just dramatically changed. And we journeyed in this journey for 10 years. And over, a new crisis would come or something else would come up, and it demanded a lot of creativity to figure out, what the hell am I going to do with this one? We did lots of fun things. At one point, I thought, you know, he could live for a long time with this disease, and I wanted to see a lot of friends who are elderly. And so we did a 10,000-mile road trip, and we stayed with somebody we knew every night for 10 weeks, had a ball. He didn't ever know what city we were in, and that didn't matter. I had a great Prius with a really good navigation system, put in that address, and it would take me anywhere we needed to go. We listened to books, and sometimes he followed, and sometimes he didn't, and we had lots of country music CDs to listen to. One night, we traveled for 12 hours. We were going to spend that one night in a motel, and he said, oh, please don't stop. It was like 6 o'clock, and I had already been driving 8 or 9 hours to get to the next stop. And he said, if you stop now, I won't remember the story, so I won't know what the ending is, and it won't make any sense to me tomorrow. So I called our next friends that we were going to visit, and I said, would it be okay if we arrived about 10:30? And they said, sure. So we drove to him. As we finished the story, we were driving into their driveway. And they met us with two frozen mugs and his kind of beer. And all of life was good. He loved the end of the story. And that was kind of what we did for lots of our time, is travel and do all kinds of fun things. And then at one point, we have three kids that are mine. He has two from his first marriage, and each of them has a child. So I had lots of kids in my life, and our surprise child, who we invited into the family and who came and was a part of the family for a good bit of our lives. And my kids claim her as another sister and are good friends with her. But near the end, gradually, one thing after another started failing. Like, he couldn't remember, he didn't know how to read, he lost his ability to read. So when I would send him upstairs to go to bed, he wanted to go to bed early, and I would send him up while I turned off the lights and shut the house, made sure the doors were locked and that kind of stuff. And he'd get up there and he said, I don't know what room to go in. And we had signs on the doors, Betsy and Ralph's room and guest room and whatever. And then I started putting butterflies on the door. And I said, it's the room with the butterflies. And he said, oh, great. And then he would be able to go in. We would have family dinner with my granddaughter, who adored her pop-pop. She was 3 years old. And the two of them would go up and watch Christmas movies and kids' stuff together. And while his ability to follow more complicated plots decreased, he loved kid stuff, and one of the great joys was hearing the two of them just rolling on the floor practically, laughing at Sesame Street or any of the kids' cartoons. That was a great joy. And then one day he said to me, Kari, that's his mother's name, and he said, Kari, what was my birth like for you? Now, Kari lost her mother at her birth. And I don't know exactly what happened, but Kari survived and her mother did not. And she had five older siblings. And they were rough on her. There was no mother figure until she was a teenager. And by then, she was a bitch on wheels, to put it plainly. She was really a very nasty woman. And so I'm thinking, okay, what am I going to do with this? What was my birth like? And I'd heard the story many times. So I said, okay. I said, well, you know, I was a really tiny woman, probably not even 100 pounds, less than 5 feet tall, and you were an 8.5-pound baby, and you wanted to come butt first. And it took me 3.5 days to get you out. All of that is fact. I'd heard it from cousins. I'd heard it from everybody. And so I said, but once I got you out, and I saw those big chocolate eyes and this mass of curly blonde hair, I just fell in love with you. I said, you were the most beautiful baby I'd ever seen. I couldn't get enough of you, and I just couldn't even put you down. I didn't want anybody else taking care of you because you were mine, and this, you were so beautiful. And I went on and on like this, and he's grinning, just the biggest grin I'd ever seen him grin. Because the fact was that once she gave birth, she never touched her son, my husband, until, well, for the first year of his life. one of her older siblings took care of Ralph, and whatever nurturing and mothering she got from that sister, not from his mother. And she was unpredictably abusive, which anybody here who's a therapist will know that's the worst kind of abuse. If you're going to get beat every day, know that if you do something, get it done, be done with it, and then you go on with your day. But with unpredictable abuse, one day something's fine, the next day you're going to be thrown across the floor for doing it, and you never know when it's going to come. It might be weeks in between, it might be a day in between, but you never know what's going to trigger that. And that's the kind of abuse he had spent his whole life having. So the next day, after this experience with him, his cousin, who used to pick him up from his men's Alzheimer's group, she would pick him up on Thursdays every week, and she'd been doing it for about 5 years because it was at her church that this group would meet, and she would bring him home for me, so that gave me another hour of my own time. And so Thursday night, I get a call from her, and she said, "What happened?" I said, "I don't know what you mean. What happened?" And she said, "Well, for the last 5 years, when Ralph would get in the car, he would start talking about how much he hated his mother. He wanted to go piss on her grave and dig up her bones and beat them into dust. He just hated her so much." And she said, "And today, he came and he started talking about how much he loved his mother." And so I told her what had happened the night before at dinner. And she said, "You know, that's a miracle I never thought would happen. I never thought he would be..." First of all, I said, "What in the hell were you doing letting him go on like that 5 years? I mean, I have my limit with how much of that kind of stuff I can handle." And when he would start going on with me, I said, "You know, you got to let it go, Ralph." That's how I would treat it. But he had never before asked me, as his mother, what it was like. And so it really did change him in a very dramatic way. And a couple weeks later, at the dinner table, little Addie was saying to him, "Pop, you are very, very old." And he said, "You know, Adelaide, I am very, very old." They're sitting across from each other, and they just adored each other. It was so much fun. And then she said, "And you're going to die very, very soon." And he said, "You know, I just might die very, very soon." And then we continued on. Nobody made any more comments. Dinner went on. And my daughter, Addie's mother, called the two older girls, one in Florida and one in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, and said, "Your dad's getting ready to die. You need to come home this week." And they both came up for the weekend and had a wonderful time. They spent most of the weekend talking about all the fun they'd had with Kari. Kari had been a good grandmother to those two girls. Because Susie's only 5 years younger than I am, the oldest one. So we're friends, but she had no time for my kids. But she was really a good grandmother with them, and they had lots of fond memories. But my husband could never tolerate hearing those good memories because he was never a part of it. He never got from her what they had gotten in such abundance. She adored those two girls. She made clothes for them. She took them places. She did all kinds of stuff with them. She was a good grandmother. And this weekend that Susie and Beth came up, Ralph was able to be right in the middle of the conversation like he had been a part of those fun times with everybody else, which to me was amazing because he really thought he was a part of it, and he was laughing and joking and never got angry, never resentful the way he had always been in the past. And so it was a real gift. He died a week later in my arms from a massive stroke. And he knew that was coming, and I did too, because he had gone off his Coumadin 5 years earlier. And we knew he had a blood clot, and he did not want to go to the doctors. I mean, we had agreed whatever that would happen is what would happen. But when he died in my arms, he was more whole emotionally and spiritually and every kind of way than he'd ever been before he had Alzheimer's. Thank you.